Nathan, I have a strong life recommendation for you.
Oh, go on.
And all the kids out there listening, brush your teeth.
For the love of God, yeah, brush your teeth.
Yes. Strong recommend, brush your teeth. It's a good idea, you know?
Brushing your teeth is amazing.
You know, sometimes when you're a kid, you listen to the dentist and they say, oh, you've got to brush your teeth. And you're like, I don't really have to brush my teeth. But you do. Otherwise, it's really, really sore and the nerves in your teeth die and then get infected. And it's just a bad time all around.
That sounds horrific.
Yeah, it's bad.
I have no experience with this. I have wonderful teeth. I have a dentist appointment next week, actually. But I expect them to just tell me everything's good. And then I say, see you in a year.
Oh, that sounds nice. That sounds so nice.
I wish it was the same for my eyes. I'm slowly going blind.
Are we getting old? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, we're... Kale, in 5 years, I'm going to be 30.
Oh, you're right. Oh, crap. Let's change the subject.
Let's talk about happy things.
So you may know recently, Nathan, I released a video about Mass Effect.
You did. I watched it. It was interesting.
Thank you. I didn't mean for that to coincide with N7D. It was a total coincidence. I actually realised on N7D, it's like, oh, it's N7D. And I'm working on a Mass Effect video. I could have timed this slightly better.
Yeah, that's almost really good cross-promotion.
Almost perfect. Yeah, if it wasn't. Anyway, I have two things to say about this. One is just a minor nitpick I have, which is, if you are in the comments of that video telling me that Ashley's not racist, she's actually because it's aliens and not other races of people, you're very smart. You're very clever. You've uncovered the true secret of the video. Congratulations.
She's actually xenophobic, Kyle, don't you know?
I do know. I said it in the fucking video. No, okay. I swear to God, that is the most popular comment on that video, is people telling me that she's not actually racist, she's xenophobic.
Usually I get a little bit nosy and look at your comment section. I didn't even bother for that one, and I kind of wish that I had now.
Well, it's always there to go back to, but that's mostly what you can expect.
Great.
Second thing is, for N7D this year, this is the more important thing, is they did give some cryptic hints for the next Mass Effect game.
Very cryptic.
Very cryptic. There was a trailer of a person in a trench coat, and they kind of look like a Destiny warlock, and they're walking down a hallway.
They did look like a Destiny warlock.
They looked a lot like a Destiny. I don't know if it's the design of the helmet and the coat. It screams warlock to me.
It's the whole gear. It's the whole get-up.
Anyway, I just wanted to say, I think this whole, we're going to cryptically tease our future games, and you're going to have to dig through the poster for hidden meanings, and if you look at this shape, it kind of looks like the Paragon logo, so the Paragon Renegade system is coming back. I think all of this is going to backfire massively.
How per se, why?
Because the game's not going to come out for like 5 years, at least. They're still in the cryptic tease hint for their next game, which isn't Mass Effect. So yeah. The fact that they're cryptic teasing their next game after that, the things that they're teasing now are not even going to be in the game by that point, because things can change so much by then.
It's all going to get cycled out.
Exactly. So I just don't see how teasing a game this far ahead of time is a good idea.
Do you not think they're working on both games at once?
I don't think BioWare is big enough to work on both games at once anymore.
Oh, interesting.
I honestly think if Dragon Age 4 isn't like a massive smash success, BioWare might be done.
That's a big...
I mean, Anthem, like, you look at it this way, Mass Effect Andromeda was not a smash success. It was very controversial, it was a rough launch, and it hasn't had much of a shelf life. I like it, but...
It's got the story in the comics, baby!
I don't think it... I mean, maybe.
I thought it got part of its, like, sort of like loose ends put in comics. I thought you told me this once.
There is a couple of books and comics, I think, but they don't follow up on the story. They're just prequel stuff.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, but... So Mass Effect Andromeda was a bit of a failure. Anthem was a massive failure. Like, I think the servers shut down in that game after a year. It was a total, like, train wreck.
They were planning Anthem 2.0 and then had to cancel it after saying it was going to be a thing.
Yes, exactly. So after two failures in a row, like, if BioWare doesn't, like, re-establish themselves, they might just be stuffed.
That would be a big loss to the gaming industry.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the time for it. Volition just died to the Saints Row people, and they've been around for like 30 years.
Who do they sell the rights of their IPs to?
Well, EA owns them, I guess. But...
Oh, all right, okay, yeah. So they would just fold them in and you would get a DICE-made Mass Effect game?
Yeah, something like that, probably.
Yeah. That'd be a shame for BioWare. I feel like they've been around forever. I know Volition as well, but how did that last Saints Row game go down?
Badly.
Badly, yeah.
I mean, once again, I like it because I always like these things, but yeah, it was not a smash success.
So, what do you think is, like, what should they do? Should they just say nothing for Mass Effect, the next Mass Effect? Or
yes, yeah, yes, just nothing? They should. They should, if they're going to tease anything, they should be teasing their next game. But I guess because Mass Effect is the more popular IP, they're like, we have to tease that one.
Yeah, Mass Effect rules, Dragon Age rules.
It reeks of, like, desperation almost to me, the fact that they're talking about how it's going to be a sequel to both Andromeda and the original trilogy, and I just...
It's going to be Halo Infinite.
And we all love Halo Infinite.
Perfectly mid.
I think people are turning around at Infinite now, at least on the multiplayer side, but they haven't touched the campaign.
Yeah, and I think the campaign might just be dead. This might just be a one, and like they talked about this being the next gen. That we're going on a tangent with Halo Infinite. We spoke about it on the show before. Halo Infinite is what it is, but the multiplayer is getting a lot better, and we love every improvement they put into it. Mass Effect, on the other hand, oh boy.
Well, I mean, they're in good graces right now because the Legendary Edition went down pretty well. I think that was a popular move.
We are forgetting about that. That was a massive income boost for them as well. It's not like they didn't produce a product, that is a new product.
No, and all the touches they needed to Mass Effect 1 made it an actual playable game, and all that stuff was good. That got them some good graces, that got them some brownie points.
They know what they're doing, hopefully, maybe, kind of.
But also, like, as I keep saying, they have another game coming out before this, and we only know the title.
Do you think maybe they're trying to get all eyes on BioWare's social media pages through the Mass Effect hype, and then they do a bait and switch and go, here's Dragon Age, and everyone goes, oh, Dragon Age.
That's possible because the Game Awards are coming out. They might be planning to announce something at the Game Awards. I hadn't considered that.
Everyone sees the Mass Effect hype and they go, oh, follow all these socials to get the latest update, and then a big PR stunt thing like the Game Awards, like you just said, come around and it's Dragon Age and they go, what the fuck?
I don't know if you know the back, you probably wouldn't know the backstory of Dragon Age, but apparently, I mean, I don't think this is official, but apparently they were building it as a big, like, live service game, and then they basically scrapped 90% of the game because Anthem was such a failure.
Yikes.
So, we'll see.
I mean, you know, it's definitely live service that I think is kind of struggling the most at the minute, because they're learning that maybe it's like a quick boost for income over like a couple of years, but it doesn't have legs because people want the next product, and making a live service game incentivizes not giving a new product.
It's the kind of thing where only a couple of giants can actually do it.
Yeah, it's like Google.
Yeah, it is. It's like you can have your Destiny, although I think Destiny's struggling right now, isn't it?
Oh boy, I don't think this is going to kill it, but it's, you know, like, something doesn't kill you, but it puts you in, like, intensive care for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, they actually haven't announced the delay. The delay came from an insider leak to Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but there was a bunch of layoffs recently, that's what it was, right? Including the composer.
There was a bunch of layoffs, including the composer. A lot of the community people were also kicked out, and in the game at the Game Awards got nominated for Best Community Support.
Oh, the Game Awards.
Yeah, well, those rascals getting their PR attention.
I don't have any thoughts on the Game Awards, but that was pretty funny. The nominating to Bungie.
Well, what I will say is that... So, The Final Shape was supposed to be getting delayed, and there was a leak to Bloomberg, and reputable outlet, they said it. Then there was kind of like a low-key press release that came out from Bungie recently, but it was more like a corporate thing, it wasn't a marketing thing. And that still stated the original release date in February. But after everything that's happened, the community went from being quite disappointed about the delay to kind of just hoping that it actually is delayed now, because they do believe it should take more time. Like, they don't want it in February, they do want it later. And we think that maybe just after the Game Awards, because the new season comes out, this is supposed to be the last season that's supposed to last until February, but we're hoping that just sometime after that launches, they'll give us like a big update on how the final shape's coming along, and they'll be like, here's the thing, guys, it's coming out in June. You know, which is going to be a big content drought for the game, which I don't think is going to be good. But everyone seems to be really laying in that Bungie's are getting ready to abandon Destiny. Like, they've got to cut the 3 mini DLCs planned for after the final shape. But, like, they're not full-on expansions. So Christ knows, like, what's going to happen with that. I think they know everyone's fed up with the seasonal model. Bungie are also working on Marathon, which is supposed to be, like, I think a bit like a multiplayer.
It's an extraction shooter, right?
Yeah, it's an extraction shooter, exactly. And then there's another technically unannounced multiplayer game they're working on as well.
God, can you imagine if Bungie went back to just making normal games? What a turn of events that would be.
That would be crazy. I mean, Destiny 2 didn't launch as a live service game. They've technically never made a live service game from the ground up. They have.
I don't know about that.
They retrofitted Destiny 2 to be a live service game.
I guess it was sort of an MMO.
It had a microtransaction store in it, because they added that near the end of Destiny 1, but it was it wasn't a free-to-play game, it was a full paid-for game, and then you paid for the 2 post-release mini expansions, and then there was another expansion coming the second year, which was Forsaken, and that's when they also said, and we're going to start releasing seasons with that, which is, up until Forsaken came out, that's all Destiny 1 had been. It was expansion, a year of nothing, expansion, and then D2, and that's what D2 was kind of poised to be. And then they're like, we're gonna make it free to play, and we're gonna give you seasons, and we're gonna get one big expansion a year. So they kind of retrofitted the launch of D2 to be live service, but it really wasn't when it first came out. So maybe you know, this Marathon game will just be a multiplayer game that isn't live service, or who knows, maybe it will be.
But you know what we can be sure of is that the Suicide Squad game is going to be a massive hit.
I can't wait to play Suicide Squad, the Justice League that they kill. I'm seeing people saying that this is set in, like, the aftermath of the Superman game that everyone wants this studio to make.
Uh-huh.
And people are like, they're never going to make a... Is it Rocksteady?
Rocksteady, yeah.
It's like, they're never going to make an Arkham Universe Superman game. Like, it won't happen.
Rocksteady is another one where this game might be the death of them. We'll see.
I think a lot of studios are on the bowing out, unless they're backed by big corporate publishers. Like, if, like, 343 should be dead, but it's backed by Microsoft, so it's going to be fine.
At this point, I think 343 is just the name Microsoft uses to make Halo. I don't know how much of a real studio it is anymore.
It's just their, like, publishing front.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. But, like, Microsoft is too big to fail, so Halo's too big to fail, even though we kind of wish that it was.
Shall we move on from games? We have other things.
To other depressing topics, sure.
Shall we move on to studying spiders in the Amazon with my mom before she dies?
I would love to talk about studying spiders in the Amazon briefly before she died. With muscly Spider-Man.
What was his name? Like, Ezekiel?
I call him not Aaron Taylor Johnson.
He does look a bit like Aaron Taylor Johnson, though, doesn't he?
He does look like Aaron Taylor Johnson. And Aaron Taylor Johnson, famously, though, going to be Kraven the Hunter.
Yes, of course. You have to respect Sony at some point, you know? Like, they're trying. They're really trying.
But they cancelled the El Muerto movie, so they clearly have a line where they say no to things. I thought they didn't.
I thought that was just because the main actor left.
Bad Bunny.
Bad Bunny, yeah, he left the project.
Well, see, I don't know, because he was in Bullet Train, also featuring Aaron Taylor Johnson. I think that was a Sony picture. I don't know. Like, it felt like good corporate synergy, and then just like branching these two people that we liked in other movies in the same movie into their separate movies, part of the Marvel, Sony Marvel non Spider Verse.
Yeah,
but I think it's just because El Muerto is a silly idea. Though I thought the rest of them were silly ideas, though, but, you know, I thought they were never going to say no, but apparently they say no.
I don't actually have much to say about this trailer. It doesn't look awful. It doesn't look like Morbius levels. It looks, at least there's some spider people in it, you know?
Oh, wait, so can I talk about the Sonyverse for a little minute here? I might have already said this in the show before.
Go ahead.
I think that people are crazy with the Sonyverse. Like, it's all sort of like universal mockery, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But everyone liked the first Venom. I think Venom 1, Venom 2, and Morbius are all in the exact same level of quality, and that is, it was fine. I don't understand people that loved Venom but bagged on Morbius. They're both about the same in terms of, like, quality, at least to me. And either take that as me saying that I think Morbius is fantastic, or think that I'm saying that Venom is just okay. Because Morbius wasn't great, but neither was Venom. Everyone seems to think the first Venom movie was the shit. It was just a bit not shit, actually. So, you know, I kind of look at the Sony non-Spider-verse a little bit differently than most people. I think that's just all kind of equally mid. I think that actually this Madam Web film looks a little bit better than all of them, dare I say it? But except that one line. That one, you know, that you know the line. When I watched that in the trailer, my eyes did roll. I was like, oh god. But the thing that hooked me was just that they're finally putting spider people into this. It's overdue, in my opinion.
It's certainly something. I find the Sony Pictures Spider-Man universe more interesting on a corporate level than I do the actual watching of the movies.
Well, I always find stuff interesting on a corporate level, so I'm right there with you.
It's just like, it's this little, like, offshoot. It's like, well, we tried making our Spider-Man movies, no one liked them, so we handed that over to Marvel, but we still got all these other characters that we could, like, I guess, cash in on and make money with. No one knows them, but we own them, so we could just use them.
Well, that's why they were smart to start with Venom.
Yeah, well, Venom is a popular character, although it's still bizarre that they did a Venom film without Spider-Man in it, and it's just...
It made $1 billion. I'm not kidding you when I say people really liked that first Venom movie.
Oh, I'm well aware. I just think as time goes on, that'll just become a weirder and weirder cultural artifact. Mm-hmm. That there's a Venom movie, a Venom series that doesn't have Spider-Man in
Venom
it.
Venom 3 just resumed filming after the actors and writer strike.
I know, I mean, maybe it'll lead to Venom becoming, like, his own thing in the future, and people will be like, oh, did you know that Venom used to be a Spider-Man villain? I don't know.
In No Way Home, Venom does leave a little bit of himself in the MCU.
Yeah, but I bet for a fact that was a Sony ad edition, not a Marvel edition.
I think so, but I also think Kevin Feige is smart enough to know that Venom would be a big get for the MCU.
Yeah, I guess.
There's a reason that he dropped off a little bit and then left. You know, he isn't still there. I think it will be kind of interesting to see when this little experiment they're doing ends, because I think Madam Web will do okay. I don't think it will get buried. I think it will just kind of perform. Then I think Kraven will. Kraven will be awful. Kraven will be dog shit, and all the people will point and laugh at Kraven the Hunter. Uh-huh. It's so bizarre that they... I thought Kraven would have been a great villain in one of the Venom movies.
I think that would be a great villain.
He'd be a great villain, yeah. He could have been the Thanos of the Sonyverse, where, like, he's hunting Morbius, he's hunting Venom, he's hunting Madam Web and the spiders, you know?
He's hunting Vulture, because Vulture's there too.
Yeah, Vulture shows, yeah, exactly, right? He could be, like, the secret kind of baddie, and he's like, fine, I'll do it myself, as he... You know, loads of bow and arrow as opposed to an infinity gauntlet. Like, I think that would have been a really great idea. They would think it out better than I'm currently thinking it out, but I think it would definitely be a direction that would kind of be interesting because he is a hunter. Whereas, what is he now? Just a hunter that's also got his back up against the wall?
He's an anti-hero. You know how
He's after the Rhino.
Yes.
But not Paul Giamatti.
Isn't it Paul? I thought Paul Giamatti was cast.
No,
Did I imagine that?
Not on Kraven the Hunter, no. he's from The Amazing Spider-Man 2 fame.
Yeah. Good stuff. And, you know, at least the proper Marvel Universe is doing much better.
Oh, God.
We got a couple Marvel trailers. I have nothing to say about the trailer for... What If Season 2. It looks fine. It looks like season one.
I'm actually quite... I feel like What If was almost like a sleeper hit. Like, it came and went, no one ever spoke about it, but everyone that did watch it when it was coming out liked it.
I mean, I made a video about it, I guess, so I must have liked it.
Yeah, that can only be to say that you liked it, nothing else.
Either I liked it or hated it.
Watch the video to find out. We ain't telling you here. You know, yeah, I'm excited for What If, just because I thought a lot of people are saying that they just like they're done with multiverses, they hate multiverses. I actually love multiverses. I've always been fascinated with the concept of parallel worlds where everything's like the same but a little bit different, or like different characters are put in different scenarios that they wouldn't ordinarily be in. Like, I love it as a matter of fiction, you know. Mm-hmm. But I just do think that the films we've got haven't been great displaying it, but I don't think the idea is inherently bad.
I think it's a strange concept to build an entire phase around, or like three phases, I guess. It's a saga. It's a saga, yeah. I get it, but it seems a bit ambitious to build an entire phase around, and I think that's what they're coming up against.
I think on paper it sounds like an easier thing to build a saga around than Infinity Stones.
Infinity Stones is just like a big purple man wants them. That's pretty simple stuff.
Yeah, but it sounds really boring. How do you stretch that out over three phases?
By not making every single thing about it, right? Like, Ant-Man has nothing to do... Ant-Man 1, I mean, has nothing to do with Infinity Stones.
Yeah, it's just with introducing that character to the universe.
Yeah.
I would stay on the surface of it. Shang-Chi had nothing to do with the multiverse, nor did Black Panther 2, you know?
Shang-Chi confuses it because he does go to an alternate dimension, but not a multiverse thing.
When does he go to an alternate dimension?
He goes to like the Chinese dimension with the dragons. And
that's not another dimension. That's like a Chinese Wakanda.
No, I'm pretty sure that's another dimension.
Is it another dimension? I thought it was like through like a portal, but like it wasn't another dimension. It was just like a Chinese Wakanda. It was just like a hidden part of China.
I don't think, no, I'm pretty, because there's a big freaking, like, magic door there. I'm pretty sure that was another dimension, and, like, the people there are, like, not fully human.
I've not seen Shang-Chi since it was in the cinema. I'll be real with you, Kyle.
Shang-Chi's a good movie.
Was Thor Love and Thunder about the multiverse?
I guess not.
No, I honestly don't think many of them had, though apparently everything's connected and Shang-Chi's Ten Rings will have something to do with the multiverse, and Kang's Quantumania realm had, you know, big rings in it as well, and like Miss Marvel has her bangles, like hooped jewellery is in for this saga, Kyle.
Maybe I'm just feeling because I just watched the Marvels and the Marvels kind of shoves it in for no reason, which we'll get to.
It does just kind of come out of nowhere, like right in the third act.
What's the other trailer? Echo trailer came out.
I forgot all about Echo.
It's their new Marvel spotlight, Nathan, a thing that I'm sure will last for ages and won't just be used for this one show and then become an artifact.
No, I heard that's something else. All this kind of street level stuff going forward is supposed to be branded with that. I think Daredevil's getting it as well. I honestly thought they'd already done this because it was Werewolf by Night had the Marvel special presentation logo that's only been used once and never again.
No, they used it for the Christmas special as well.
Guardians Holiday special, they did use it. Why don't they just use that? Why did they feel the need to do another one?
I don't know. I guess it's too
hyped and they want the spotlight to be more gritty and grimy, maybe?
I don't know. Is that the point of the spotlight? I thought the spotlight thing was just like...
Now, I know what the point is, but like it's like a fairly greyed out image. It's not like, if you look at the special presentation when it's got like a fun little trumpet track, you know, it's got sparkling colours.
Yeah,
whereas
I guess.
If maybe they want, you know, Echo and Daredevil are quite kind of gritty and they think that would confuse the vibe, you know?
Maybe. I think the trailer looks fine. I struggle to be too hyped for it.
Watch it be the Andor of Marvel.
I mean, it's possible. They said that about Secret Invasion, but, you know.
Oh, God. What did Moon Knight have to do with any of this? The afterlife?
The afterlife, I guess, yeah.
A crocodile fighting a hippopotamus?
The crocodile fought the big bird skeleton.
He fought Khonshu, yeah, he fought the big bird skeleton. You know what? I love Moon Knight. I could do it. Where's Moon Knight been at? I could do... Screw Secret Invasion. I wanted a Moon Knight season 2.
You know what? I agree. People keep shitting on Moon Knight for some reason, and I'm like, Moon Knight was good. Yeah, I've seen like lots of people are like, oh, Moon Knight was crap. I'm like, no,
it wasn't. That's revisionist. Everyone loved Moon Knight when it came out.
Oscar Isaac is great in it with his weird performances.
I see a lot of that online now. Like, just people having bad takes and everyone kind of going, yes, in fact, I agree with this bad take. And it's like a lot of revisionist stuff where, like, they're like, can we all agree that No Way Home was crap? Like, do you not remember at the time everyone loved it?
I know. It's the Twitter effect. It really is. It makes you feel like you're going insane.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to get involved. I want to fight people online. And I'm like, no, it's not worth my time. Sometimes I crack, but most of the time I'm...
You crack when it's Star Trek.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very, very true. Star Trek's it's the one chink in my armour.
Anytime someone says, actually, season 3 of Picard was bad, you'll be in there.
Oh, God, those people. They're like, it was your favourite season of Star Trek Picard, and people say season 1. They're like, no, how can you say that? They're like, oh, put Picard out of his comfort zone and introduced us to new interesting characters. And like, we didn't watch the same show, clearly.
I know, it's like, interesting characters? Where? Can you point them out to me, please?
I agree. Are these new and interesting characters in the room with us?
Are they talking to you right now?
oh my goodness. Like, it's just, like, what are they saying? Like, I agree that it was out of Picard's comfort zone. It was out of my comfort zone. But it doesn't make it good.
No, but, like, you know, true good writing is when you push characters into their limits and out of their comfort zone. You know, that's good. Yeah.
Making Picard a father.
Good writing is when you make characters who normally do one thing do a different thing.
Have happy-go-lucky Riker deal with death.
With the death of his son, because he couldn't have the cure because robots didn't exist.
Or something.
Or no, the cells had to be cured in a...
By a synthetic brain.
In a synthetic brain, yes. It makes perfect sense.
Give them character arcs. Don't give them ham-fisted, yeah, I'm evil buttons.
We can't shit on Picard season 1 and 2 again. We've done it before.
No, we can't. What we can talk about, though, and be little white knights for, is the hit Marvel Studios epic, The Marvels.
Well, I was thinking of this, because we've got two big Marvel things right now.
We do.
We've got The Marvels and we've got Loki season 2. What's the order to do this in?
I think we should talk about The Marvels. I think I have less to say about it, except, like, that wasn't as bad as I thought, you know. I have more, but that's the gist of it, you know.
Okay.
But Loki, I feel like we could go on about.
I feel like Loki we're going to disagree more, so that might be more interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so The Marvels came out, no one saw it except us, I guess.
Just me and you in two different theatres across the Atlantic.
Yep.
Waving our flags.
I mean, there was other people in the theatre. I assume they paid for tickets. I could be wrong.
It is very true, yeah. I mean, my theatre was actually really rammed as well. Like, packed. I was really shocked. Because I had heard this film wasn't tracking very well, and I think I'd seen it a couple nights after release. And I knew that, like, apparently theatres were dead. I went and saw it, and my cinema was ram-packed. Like, it was, like, not a butt in every single seat, but a butt in, like, every other seat in a reasonably sized theatre. Like, it wasn't 50% full either, like, I'm maybe downplaying it. It was very full. And everyone seemed to have a good time with it. Like, no one got up and walked out and didn't return. Like, it seemed good, you know? And, I mean, this is UK cinemas where everyone sits down and shuts up and watches the film. Everyone actually enjoys the thing on screen instead of having a concert. But, and going in, I'm quite a sceptical person. Ladies and gentlemen, Kyle doesn't do any marketing for these films, right? But I'm all over it. Look, we're talking about corporate things. I like to see how they market it. What's their strategy? What's their angle? And, like, is it representative of the final product? And what's the box office tracking? All that kind of thing. What's the vibe?
I know as much as say the vibe is bad.
Oh, yeah. So the vibe was kind of bad for this. And I went in and I kind of... I am also not susceptible to kind of, like, what I read. Like, I don't just kind of go, I'll judge it for myself. I do think that, but I still have all these holdovers in my head that I need to, like, overcome as I'm watching the thing. And when The Marvels started, I was like, right, okay, this is apparently really bad. And I remember also, I released The Rise of Skywalker, but I didn't see this coming. I remember everyone kind of was shitting on The Rise of Skywalker, and I was watching it at the start, and, you know, Kylo Ren's really annoyed, and he's flying through his TIE Whisper in space, and he's really angry and stuff. And I was like, this, I don't know what people were talking about. This is actually quite good. And like, he's going about with a purpose. He's on a mission. And then the second he finds Palpatine, that stops and the film happens and everyone was correct. Right?
And for me, it's slightly before that when he walks past a tank full of Snokes.
Well, I had that same impression watching this, but it was, right, okay, well, this all seems perfectly unobjectable here. Like, what's why are people shitting on this, right? And then I was like, well, this does have the Marvel villain problem, but, like, it's a bit like, I still don't really understand her motivations. And then they were like, it's her fault. She put the sun out. And I was like, what's, why is she opening portals? Like, just opening a big tornado in the sky above the Skrulls? Like, who cares? And then I went, oh, she's stealing the atmosphere. She's giving air to people. Right, okay, that makes sense. It's not just some sucky tornado to just fuck them up. It's actually, it's for a purpose. She's taking the air. And then opening the water to steal the water, and then she was going to steal the sun because she's Starkiller base, right?
Yeah.
And I think about maybe halfway through, maybe just before they reached the singing planet, I was like, no,
spoilers, by the way.
Spoilers, yeah. I was like, no, actually, you know what? I think, and what really won me over, I think, was the faithful continuation of the Kamala Khan family.
Hmm.
Because I was a big fan of the family in Miss Marvel.
Yeah, the show's a bit hit or miss, but the characters are all good.
Yeah, exactly, right? I don't really care about, what are they called? Not the Eternals.
Oh, God! Oh,
the Syndicate?
Oh.
No.
Something like that. It was like some sort of pun like that, right?
Yeah, uh-huh. Some sort of consortium sort of word.
Yes.
So they weren't really great, but the characters were super believable. The family felt relatable and everyone was dead chill, and like, they didn't feel like just slap characters, like they're just there to be the poster I am dad and I am mum. They felt like fully fleshed out characters, and for them to not just be brought over for a single scene at the start of the film but to be recurring characters, I thought was great. I thought Kamala Khan, Carol Danvers and Monica Rambeau all just played off of each other flawlessly. And I kind of thought when I heard this was a really short runtime, I was like, oh, this is just going to be like a sprint to the finish. Like, they know they don't have something great here, so let's just get it over with. But I felt like, because of its short runtime, nothing got boring, nothing got like, okay, I'm fed up with this joke. Like, we didn't have recurring jokes that were never really funny to begin with that they overextend. But also, they gave all the plot beats time to breathe, as opposed to, like, right, Skywalker, come back to it again, where they just kind of hit you with something, then 3 minutes later go into another MacGuffin and don't think about the thing that came before. They kind of, it's quite a tight film. Like, it isn't, like, everything ties back in, and the character, like I say, the characters are lovely and relatable. And again, the Marvel kind of vague villain problem, but I don't think it was as vague as maybe I thought it was going to be.
She's not the worst Marvel villain.
No, I think
as far as accusers go, she's better than Ronan the Accuser.
I think I'll remember Ronan the Accuser a lot more than I remember her, though, because I think that just visual, she was just such a boring visual.
Oh, yeah, of course. But if she was blue, that would improve things a lot.
I think going forward, when I think about this movie looking back, I'll probably think it was one with the three Marvel characters and the villain was stealing bits for their planet, but I won't remember who the villain was.
I'm struggling to remember her name right now.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is it Darben or something like that?
Listen, you could make up a name and I'd be like, sure.
It's bleedy blah 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 blah.
Yeah, because like when I first saw it and she was stealing the atmosphere, I was like, oh, this is just like Spaceballs. So my first thought was, is her name Mel Brooks? But what did you think of the Marvels, Kyle?
Well, I largely agree with what you're saying, although we're on different fronts of this, because I was looking forward to this movie. I ignored all the trailers and all the people telling me it was going to be bad, and I held faith that it was going to be good, and I thought it was good. I actually disagree with it being paced. I think this movie could have used like an extra 10 minutes on some of the character stuff to give it a little bit more time to breathe, but overall, I think it was fine.
Interesting.
Yeah, I really liked all the stuff between the leads. I feel like they finally landed in a place with Carol where she makes sense as a character. Because in all the other appearances, she's been kind of all over the place in what her personality even is.
Absolutely.
I think this is much better than Captain Marvel, the first one.
I agree, much better.
I liked Carol in this one, whereas in the first one it's like, okay, she's cool, I guess. She blows things up.
Yeah, and then Endgame, she's just nothing. She's just a slab. Apparently they filmed Endgame before Captain Marvel, though.
I can believe that. And they just had no... They left her blank because they didn't know what her personality was.
They didn't know what kind of character she was yet. And then she said when she was making Captain Marvel, she felt more, like, comfortable with, like, the character. Even though that certainly kind of doesn't really show on screen. But I think for this film, she definitely seemed a lot more in it.
I like how colourful the film was. It was very colourful. I love all the costume design and stuff like that.
Can I say something in the costume department?
Sure.
See Kamala Khan's Miss Marvel costume from the show that she has for the first bit of this film?
Yes.
Much better than the one that she got in the Singing Planet.
Strong agree. I hate that one. That's the bad one. I think all the other costumes are good, but her second, like, end of the movie costume is awful.
I also don't like Carol Danvers' second costume either. It's like, it's not as bad as Miss Marvel's second costume, but I think it is inferior to... I liked the one she had at the start of the movie with the roll-up sleeves. Yes. It was a bit more leather. Now, Maria Rambeau didn't have a costume, so she gets a pass. She needed one. That's fine. But I
wish they'd given her... I think in the comics she has that costume and then she wears, like, a Nick Fury trench coat on top of it. I wish she'd gotten the trench coat. But
maybe they thought it was a bit too 70s.
I guess so.
But, how is Fury doing after Secret Invasion, you know?
Forget about it. Don't worry about it.
I think I might have heard people say this happens after Secret Invasion. This happens before Secret Invasion, rather.
Well, no, because at the end of Secret Invasion, they mentioned the Skrull negotiations, and then that's in this movie. So it is after Secret Invasion.
Okay. I think I saw, maybe it was just Twitter discourse. Maybe I saw people suggesting something doesn't line up.
You know, it was a great character in this film, Nick Fury's wife. I'm really glad she showed up. You know, she added a lot.
You know what? Something I hated in the first film that I think I liked in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Flurkins.
I like that they set something up as a joke and then used it later. I love it when that happens.
I completely agree with you on that front. I really, really thought that, like, what are these eggs going to be? This is just, I can't be bothered. And then it was Flurkin eggs, and that's kind of cute. I'm still annoyed that that's how Nick Fury lost an eye, because in Winter Soldier, they really make you think this is going to be some Jason Bourne, James Bond level.
Oh yeah, he's like, last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye, or something like that.
And that film is still goated. That is such an amazing film. Not just a Marvel film, that is a legitimately good movie. I love The Winter Soldier.
Then he just...
Oh, it was a cat that scratched his eye, or an alien cat, technically. Like, it was played off as a joke. For me, that's the equivalent of Luke Skywalker throwing a lightsaber over his shoulder. I know you don't mind that, right? But to me, this is the same thing. It was just a complete, like, subversion, but not a satisfying subversion.
We're not doing that shit. We're not doing... I was thinking about it. I'm going to resist.
Okay.
Yeah, but no, they set up early on in the movie that the Flurkins are like, they're like bag of holdings. Their stomach, like, they don't eat anything. They just hold it.
I don't understand how their weight doesn't increase, though, with them consuming more weight.
Well, they're like magic. It's
They're Mary Poppins bags.
They're Mary Poppins bags, and they set that up, and then later it's like, they're using it, and then they play Memories from Cats. It's perfect.
Yeah, I did enjoy seeing people run in fear, but because like your fight or flight instincts are saying, I'm not going to let someone eat me. What are you talking about? That's just not what I'm going to do. Like, I would rather die, but then people are like insisting. They're like, no, this needs to happen.
Yeah. I appreciated the weird environmental details on that station, like how one of the guys was clearly like an Asgardian or whatever. I was like, that's a nice little touch.
Oh, because he said he was like 300 years old or something?
Yeah, and he's got like the braids in his beard and stuff.
I never thought of him as Asgardian, but I mean, I guess you're not wrong.
I just assumed he was.
I mean, it would make perfect sense, but it didn't occur to me watching the film.
Perfect sense to me. Valkyrie's cameo. Speaking of Asgardians, I thought that was weird.
Well, so from what I hear, there's been like a lot of like fan desires to make it official in MCU canon that Captain Marvel and Valkyrie are like a couple. Mm-hmm. And that's been a thing since like Endgame or something like that.
Which I don't understand, because did they even talk in Endgame?
I don't know, but I think they're both like bisexual characters in the comics or something like that. I'm not sure. Or the Valkyries, because like she comes from like... You know,
well,
an army of all
women.
She's
definitely gay in the MCU, even if they don't explicitly say it.
Well, apparently there was a line cut from this film where Valkyrie says to Carol that they work better as friends.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, I would read that as kind of a rejection, but everyone else is seeing that as a, ha-ha, at least they had something, you know. But apparently that line got cut. I think maybe also the director of this has worked with Valkyrie actress, whose name I'm awfully forgetting, so I love her.
Tessa Thompson.
Tessa Thompson, thank you. They have worked together on something before, and this was like a, do you want to be in the Marvel thing?
I think they're on their next film together, right?
Yeah, possibly. And this would also be like a good... Also, is it like a plot device? It's like, here, how do we get the Skrulls quickly out of this film? We've ended this scene. Sure, the Asgardians can take them.
Even if that completely conflicts with everything going on in Secret Invasion, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Like, they weren't all living on Earth, but, you know, now they all get evacuated to New Asgard on Earth. How does the... What's the bridge called? The Bifrost.
The Bifrost. Yeah.
How does the Bifrost work now? I remember it was in Love and Thunder.
Yeah. Well, in Love and Thunder, he can open it with his.
Oh,
axe.
With Stormbreaker. Yeah.
I don't know how Valkyrie's doing it.
Yeah, I don't know how Valkyrie's doing it either. This is my, you know, city infrastructure nerd coming out. Where's the utility?
Maybe they built a new one on New Asgard.
It's somewhere off the Scottish coast. Everyone thinks it's in Norway, but it isn't Scotland.
Is it canonically in Scotland?
Yes, I think it's in one of the art books. I know they film it in Scotland, and Norway would make more sense, but it's somewhere on the northeast coast of Scotland, I believe.
I thought it was supposed to be
where
Odin was.
Yeah, where Odin dies. That would make perfect sense. But I'm very sure that even though it was filmed in Scotland, and it also is in Scotland, they're just never very clear on it.
Okay, well, I don't know if anything more to say about the Marvels. I mean,
good movie, should be doing better at the box office.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about that, like... if they had released this movie, like, 2 months later, do you think it would have done better? Like, what could they have done different?
I don't know.
Do you take this as evidence that Marvel is dying, or is this, like, extenuating circumstances?
I take this as Kevin Feige's too spread thin. I think that there isn't enough creative control with like a unifying vision overseeing things. Now, the whole there's always been a plan thing has always been a lot more overstated than it has been, because I don't know how much this is common knowledge, but Civil War wasn't supposed to be getting made. And then after Batman vs Superman got announced, Kevin Feige fast-tracked it and said, no, we're definitely making it. Thor Ragnarok was supposed to be a much more serious movie playing after Age of Ultron. And then they completely pivoted in what the whole idea with that was. Like, these films are, I think they have a vague, like, an idea of, like, an endpoint, but how you get there is just kind of shooting by the hip. And with Kevin Feige just way overextended, it's just not really working for them. And I don't think people frankly care that much about Captain Marvel, which is a shame. There's the Miss Marvel show, which was probably more integral to this than maybe they wanted it to be. And I don't think enough people watched that show, because it was kind of aimed at younger audiences. I know there was an actor strike that helped with, like, there wasn't really a press junket. I'm not saying press junkets are invaluable or have no value. Like, they obviously have some value. These people wouldn't do them.
But I know trailers, you don't think it affects normies.
No, I don't think it affects normies. Trailers are important, though. And the trailers were so bad. The trailers were playing in front of other films.
Like, not, like, lots of them, or like they weren't about the place. It seems like they didn't spend much on like getting the trailers out there, because you don't see, I've not seen like Captain Marvel any bus stops or anything like that, you know.
Neither have I, to be honest with you. Maybe it's possible me and you know nothing about filmmaking, or like not filmmaking, but like what good films are, and Marvel knew they had a bad film on their hands, so decided to cut their losses.
But it's not a bad film. It's not even close to the worst MCU movie.
I surprisingly enough, I agree with you, considering how I felt before this film came out.
Like, it's maybe, like, I'll grant you, it's maybe on the lower half of, like, if we split it in half. It's not in the top tier. It's on the lower end, probably. But it's not close. Quantumania came out this year, and it was definitely better than Quantumania.
It was definitely better than Quantumania. I don't doubt you for a second there.
And Quantumania made, like, fine money. Like, I don't think it was, like, a huge success, but it made its money back.
I can't even remember if it made its money back. I know it did okay, though.
It wasn't the worst performing Marvel movie ever, which is this one is.
This is performing poorer than Morbius.
It's insane. I just don't know how that makes sense. Can you make it make sense?
Well, back to the Twitter discourse, I see a lot of people putting this in the feet of fans, saying it's their fault. It's like, no, people have a right to, you know, vote with their wallets and see what they want. There's lots of choices to even just not go out, stay home. They might want to catch it on streaming, because that's the new era we live in. They didn't think this was, you know, a big enough occasion to go to the movies. I think maybe people just... I know you asked me earlier if this seemed like the death of Marvel, and I said no, but I think it is, like, people just didn't care. People really don't. I think, and I know people online go, you know, oh, lots of, you know, misogyny and people don't like female-led action stories and all that. Everyone saw Barbie. Everyone loved Barbie. The most girly pop of girly movies ever. And it done great. It was Barbenheimer. It was the big cross two movie promotions. It didn't cannibalise each other and both done really well relative to their budgets. I think also this suffers from a massive overly inflated budget, might I say?
Yeah, I think that is an issue.
I don't know if they got money happy after Endgame was the highest grossing movie in the world.
They got cocky.
Yeah, they're just like, everyone gets massive money.
I will say, compared to some of the other ones, this had less of a feeling of we'll fix it later in CGI with a lot of the costumes and things. It did seem like they had this stuff more planned out, at least.
I wonder if they thought, was that a K-pop star that was the prince?
God, I have no idea. I didn't recognize him.
Maybe thought the K-pop community are going to show up in force for this film, you know?
You know what, if it was a K-pop person, they probably would have, so I don't think it is a K-pop person.
No, I'm at a loss for... I don't know why this movie's doing so badly, because if I thought the film was bad, I would give you X, Y, and Z reasons as to why. Like, I know it's performing poorly, but I liked it, and I just... Like, I think it's nothing to do with the quality of the movie, I'll say that. I think it was all about bad marketing. I think people in general don't have a good history with this character, so they didn't think it was worth it. I think just there's too much Marvel happening right now. I don't want to say Marvel fatigue, but maybe it is Marvel fatigue. I don't know. I think people are just... Like, they feel like there's too much Marvel. They're not saying they don't want Marvel anymore, but it's so much to keep track of, you know? People are still trying to finish Loki, and now they need to go out and see the Marvels.
I think they need to pivot their marketing to be more like the comics. Because if they're going to have this big expanded universe like the comics, you just need to play like the comics, where you just accept that a lot of people aren't going to read the Loki comics. And only Loki fans will read the Loki comics, right?
Well, after the big news about the pivot they're doing with the Daredevil show, I think that kind of might be what they're doing, where they're just...
Yeah, and we'll see if that works. That seems like the only viable option to me.
They're doing proper pilot episodes that they'd never done before. They were just shooting full seasons like TV shows and fixing it in post. They're writing show bibles, which is like a TV term for, like, here is the doctrine of this show, here's what we do that makes this show great. We're getting writing team, we're getting TV-specific executive producers in, as opposed to movie producers doing TV producers' work, because they were treating all these shows like movies. And I know occasionally you got the Loki that everyone liked, or you got a reasonably good Moon Knight, or stuff like that. But broadly speaking, it was all kind of flying by the seat of their pants and kind of like acting like they were making films, but cutting up into six parts. And I really think this Daredevil pivot might be... I mean, I know they're scrapping a lot of the work and it's going to cost a hell of a lot more money to make now. But this really could be... The TV shows are kind of be more TV-like, you know? And
yes,
movies will be more movie-like, because now they'll actually have, like, a division instead of one united house that kind of can't do everything.
Remember Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? That was a good show.
God, I remember. I think it was Ming-Na Wen's birthday recently.
It was. I think it's today.
Is it today? Happy birthday, Ming-Na Wen. People were like, what's your favourite Ming-Na Wen role? And I thought, the cavalry.
Well, shall we talk about the last vestige, speaking of Marvel TV, of this old style of Marvel TV?
Sure, let's go for it.
Okay. Loki season 2.
Loki the second season.
So you gave your overall thoughts first and the Marvels, so I guess I'll go first for Loki.
Sure, go for it.
So I think overall, I didn't enjoy this season right up until the last episode, which I think is the best episode of the show. I think we faffed around for 5 episodes, but then they brought it in the end to something I quite enjoyed.
I can't believe something that you thought was that much of a mess you then went to, but they nailed the landing.
It's weird. It's the opposite of like every other Marvel show where the first few episodes are good and then they mess it all up in the finale. That was my feelings about season 1 of Loki. I didn't like the finale of season 1 at all. I think we talked about it on the podcast.
Probably, yeah. I don't remember what you thought of the end. Did you not? You didn't like that no one knew who he was and they killed Kang and...
I just thought the last episode of season 1 was horribly, horribly boring. It was half an hour of sitting in a room spouting exposition.
Okay. Well, my thoughts in season 2 was kind of the opposite of that. Apart from the end, I also liked the end. I thought, not to sound too much like Ensign Harry Kim from Star Trek Voyager, but sometimes it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. Now, I think that saying only works if the journey is entertaining. If the journey is just shit and you just want to get to the end, fair enough. But if you're enjoying the ride, and I certainly was, I love the TV, I love the sound design, the costume design, I like the story, I like the visuals of the whole thing, I like the acting, and I never thought that the story was wasted. I always thought stuff was happening. I know you could see like the tangent of them going to like a World's Fair carnival and Miss Minutes becoming a big spooky ghost is a bit kind of like, right, what are we doing here? Like, hurry up, right? But like I said, I'm enjoying the ride and I was just having fun with it. Maybe Marvel's weird way of producing TV shows has just conditioned me to accept filler. That's something the Mando Lorian also suffered from, where some weeks you felt like just nothing would happen. But again, with Loki, I actually didn't feel that I was going through filler episodes. I just really enjoyed it.
This is baffling to me. This is like the opposite of everything I feel about the middle episodes.
Yeah, okay, well, we were speaking about it week to week briefly in private, and I remember you kind of not enjoying it, and me and our friend were just like, no, it was good, it's quite good. I think that it's a lot easier to tear something down than it is to build it up. So I think like if you were to do like a structured here's what I didn't like about it, I don't even know if I'd be able to fight you on it. But I know how I felt when I was watching it, and it was one of being satisfied each week. I know that it looks like Loki's now going to be heading back to the movies, though. I certainly don't believe he's done, though I do kind of believe that there's not going to be a Loki season 3.
No, I think we've made that pretty definitive. Okay, let me lay out my counter-argument here, because I think, like, okay, you need time between episode 1 and episode 6 for Loki to get where he is as a character. You need time for that to happen. I understand that.
Yeah.
But things need to happen during that time that matter.
And for Loki, centuries went by between during the last episode.
That was in episode 6.
Yeah.
That was the good episode. Look, the whole idea of episode 5, right? Episode 5 where everyone is like scattered and Loki goes and sees what their like non-variant versions look like.
Yeah.
So, like, Mobius is in a jet ski place and stuff like that. That episode only works if we know the characters he's going to visit. And out of that crew, we only really know Mobius. Like, what can you tell me about B-15 as a character?
She's just a TV enforcer.
Exactly. There's nothing to her, because we've not spent any time, like learning about her. And when Sylvie's like, oh, you're just selfish and want your friends, it's, are these your friends? Is the little office guy your friend?
I would buy him as being more of a friend than B-15. I think B-15 is probably the biggest question mark there.
Even Ouroboros, he's barely, like, I like Kihai Kwan, is that how you pronounce it?
Kiwei Kwan, yeah.
Yeah, I like him in the show, but like, Ouroboros is a pretty, like, one-note character, in my opinion. He's the guy who spouts tech stuff in a fun, chipper way, and there's really not much more to him than that.
Kiwi Kwan. That's fine.
Right, but there's, like, and we spend episodes with, just for most of the season, it's not clear what's even happening. I didn't understand what the temporal loom even did until episode 6.
As again, we spoke this in private, I think I was also kind of confused about that as well, but then that was cleared up for me, at least around about episode 4, when we were having a discussion with our friend about it.
The temporal limb only makes sense to you once you know that it was a trap from Kang, and it was always supposed to fail. Then it's like, oh, now I understand it. But before that, it's like, well, timelines existed before this thing existed, right?
Yeah.
And they did, and it's true. And, like, see when it fails, and it's like, oh, it's a scaling issue. You didn't freaking realize that beforehand? It seemed so obvious to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, just a bunch of, like, character. You could cut Renslayer from the show entirely and lose nothing. You could cut Miss Minutes. You could cut what's-his-name, the other agent guy.
The actor from the 70s.
Actor man guy. None of these characters need... You could cut Angry Scottish Lady.
No,
none of
we
these
can't
characters
cut her.
Are important.
Cut her. No, she was great. Because she bought them more time when they went and detonated things in the other timelines.
I guess.
She didn't mean to buy them more time. She's just meant to do her job and commit multiversal genocide. But, like, that was the end effect, was they kind of benefited from her weird actions. Like I say, I was enjoying the journey. I like the characters. B-15 is fine. I don't actually think B-15 is that big of a presence in the show. I know maybe the show, it's a bit like the Star Trek Discovery crew thing where they're never really developed, but everyone seems to think that they are. But
I got very strong impressions of her from that, because this season seems to think she's like one of the main cast, even though she's not.
Yeah, I think they expanded her role a bit in this season from season one, but I wouldn't say that like she's like the character that I want to see, you know. But I think it still honed it all back to Loki and Sylvie. I think they kind of forget that Sylvie's a Loki variant. I don't know.
I find it interesting you say that, because for me, this season, it felt like the writers had no idea what to do with Sylvie.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like they kind of forgot, you know, like, you know, she's a Loki, you know. I think they kind of played more into the villainy of Loki a bit this season.
They paid homage to it, maybe.
I kind of forgot he was Thor's brother until they were at that Norse place. Because, I mean, as I said, and I think this is the fault of season one, they really fast-tracked Loki to just be his Infinity War version of the character, even though he should only be, at this point, he's like, what is he, like, a week after Avengers 2012 right now? How many years did season one take place, you know? None. It was like a few days.
Ironically, for a show like this, the passage of time is very unclear.
Yeah, right? I mean, the last episode of this season goes over centuries, but I think everything up until that point is really only maybe a couple weeks.
Yes.
Less than that, maybe.
That's the impression I get.
Right now, he should just be starting off his prison sentence in Asgard, leading to Thor the Dark World, where he's definitely a villain, you know?
He's not a villain in Thor the Dark World.
Yes, he definitely. He's in prison. He tells people where to go.
But he helps Thor at the end of that movie.
That's what Loki always does, though. He's always a bit of a prick, and then he helps out, and he's a bit of a prick again. But it's like slow character progression, you know? Up until Infinity War, where like, you're like, we have a Hulk, you know? The big, everything's coming full circle for Loki from the first Avengers movie. And it felt like it took years to get there. And then you look at this, and it's literally been less than a year in terms
See,
of his...
I don't mind that. Like, that element of it, I'm fine with. It's more the building up his relationships with the other characters and making that believable.
I completely buy his relationship with Mobius.
Yeah, Mobius and Sylvie, I buy. Everyone else, I'm like, does he really care about these people?
I don't know. For me, I never felt the show was putting that much emphasis on people specifically. It was just the group. Now, I think he probably definitely does care about Mobius and Sylvie more than Office Dude, Andy or whatever, and B-15, and Ouroboros, though I think Ouroboros made a hell of an impression this season. But I don't think they say, hey, Loki, you just care about getting back to your best bud, B-15. They're just vague enough to be like your friends at the TVA. Now, for me, that would be more specifically Mobius, right? And yes, Sylvie. But I guess Sylvie's the one putting that to him. But, like, I don't know, this wasn't a thing that clicked with me while watching it, that, like, the show is specifically saying, hey, Loki and B-15 are BFFs. That's not the way I interpreted the dialogue that was happening in that episode. I don't even know quite how to express it to you in the English language. Like, you're saying these things to me and I'm like, I mean, I guess you could interpret it like that. Like, I don't think that's not the way to interpret it. But it's just certainly not, when I was watching that, was like, that wasn't the question that popped up in my head. I know I'm like really critically analysing like Star Trek.
This is like a tangential thing. This is not like my bigger problem. My bigger problem was that the middle episodes like are just like cyclical and nothing important really happens for four episodes.
We get Victor Timely to start moving. He knew nothing before.
But Victor Timely doesn't matter in the end of the show.
Yeah, but he's fun.
No, he's not. I hate him so much.
He's fun. I like Victor Timely.
Every scene with him is like pulling teeth.
Oh, it was. I mean, listen, I enjoy Jonathan Majors as the character of Kang, and all real world stuff aside, like, just to watch him act for me is a joy. And like, again, I didn't like, again, it's about the journey. If the journey's enjoyable, I'm fine with it. If the journey's crap, I'm like, let's just get to the end. I was perfectly enjoying this. I thought it was just well spent. I was very happy that like they weren't speedrunning the episodes.
When you're spending 5 minutes with Victor Timely getting a hot chocolate, I just can't.
Nah, they had bits. They were doing bits.
What bits? What were the bits? Give me the bits.
I can't remember the bits. Because
there wasn't any. There wasn't any bits. It was just him going to a hot chocolate machine, and then he gave it to the guy, and there was a weird smile, and it was just a bunch of freaking nonsense.
It was body language humor or something like that. I don't know what to say to you, Kev. That's what I'm saying, where it's very easy to tear something down and then for me to maybe not really be able to object to the things that are coming out of your mouth, but I just know that that's just not how I perceived it when I was watching it. Like, I had a great time. I don't know what to say. Like, I like the TV, I like the music. The show is like an end product.
The show cannot decide if Victor Timely is like a genius or a huckster or like what his whole motivation is. Like,
he's supposed to be like a fish out of water that kinda knows things.
But like in the first, when he's introduced, he's like conning people at that place. And then he like throws Renslayer off a thing and all this, like, he just does stuff to make drama happen with no real like characterization whatsoever.
I will say, I was surprised that he never had more of a mean streak after he chucked her off the ship. I was like, oh, okay, right, things might get good here. And then, not good here, I was enjoying
it. Imagine that, if things got good, yeah.
Right, I fell right into that one. like Renslayer fell off that boat. And I was like, well, maybe there's like a more of a dark streak to him here. And then the show never followed up with that dark streak. I fully grant you that. They just kind of left it. Like, she got reunited with him and was like, oh my god, you're here. And then they'd done nothing with it, you know? Fine. I completely, completely grant it. And I'm a massive hypocrite because if Star Trek done this, I would hate it. I would be like, what is this show doing? I understand. But for some reason, my brain chemistry enjoyed it in Loki. Maybe it makes me just a big hypocrite, Kyle. I don't know what to tell you. I liked it. And then the fact that, as you agree to, the show nailed the landing, I'm like, well, it's fine.
If I was to rewatch this show, I would skip like almost all of season two and just jump to the final episode. Because episode one was okay. Like, even the final episode when they're having, like, they basically established that everything we've been trying to do for the last five episodes was a waste of time and it was never going to work.
It's okay. The journey, Kyle. The journey.
Yeah, well, if the journey's boring, then it doesn't matter.
I don't know, but I just didn't find the journey boring, like I'm saying. I just don't know what to tell you.
I mean, clearly we're at a fundamental disagreement here.
I don't know, we are a fundamental... Listen, maybe a time will come where I rewatch it and go, listen, gentlemen, Kyle was right, this show was dog shit. Or maybe a time will come where you soften to it. I don't know. Because I don't really intend on rewatching it. I've never rewatched Loki season one. This must be how people that I speak to on Twitter feel. Like that.
You're defending Picard season one right now.
I liked it when the Romulans bashed the skulls at the rocks with Laird, Kyle. I don't know what to tell you.
They touched the ring and it made them sissy.
That was just what happened, Kyle. They touched the ring and it made them mad, and then they bashed each other's skulls in with rocks, and within the dialogue of the show, I enjoyed the journey.
Okay, well, let's at least move on to the final episode, which I did like, because it was fun. It did the Groundhog Day thing, which is always fun.
It done the Heaven Sent Doctor Who thing.
It did the Day After Tomorrow thing, or Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise movie thing. Yeah, you know?
Definitely.
But I enjoyed it. It was fun. And then it ended with a nice, like, emotional moment for Loki, which I think worked. It was good.
With amazing music. I can't just stress enough how much I love the synthy music in this show. Not synthy, what's it called? The theremin?
Yeah, I guess so.
The thing they use for the Star Trek, the original series sound, where it's like the thing you put your hand over nothing and it goes, ooh, you know, that kind of thing. I love it.
Yes.
Love it. I like
theremin? Theremin,
that's what I said.
I thought you said theremin, okay.
No. you know exactly the instrument I'm talking about, you know? Yeah. I love the set design of this show. Continue to speak about the last episode, because all I'll do is just gush about the set design and the sound design.
See, I nitpick with the set design, because I thought the set design this season was worse than season one.
I thought it was a nice extension of season one.
It was just, like, all of the stuff in, like, OB's round place.
Yeah.
It's just not as interesting as all the offices and stuff up top that they were exploring in season one.
They're in like the engine room of the TVA. Like, I was fine with that.
Yeah, well, it's just a bunch of grey hallways.
I liked all the, you know, but it's all like the stone foundations. They're in the foundations of the TVA, Kyle. They've gone deeper into it now because we're in season two of Loki on Disney Plus, Kyle.
I mean, to me, the whole concept of the TVA still, I still don't really get like what it is.
It's like an office building outside of time and space.
Yeah, but how?
It's Gallifrey.
How does it have foundations then?
It's thematic, Kyle. It's not literal.
Sure.
It's a metaphor. It's a butterfly.
A butterfly that never flaps its wings has never lived at all.
Exactly. Leatherette office building without foundations is never really a leatherette office building thing. Got you there, Kyle.
So I mean, look, as much as I liked the last episode, I do not think this was like the peak of Marvel or whatever people were saying. I saw people saying, like, you remember the scene where Miss Minutes crushes a bunch of people with a cube? And people on Twitter were like, this is the most graphic scene that we've ever seen in the MCU. And I'm like, what are you talking
about?
That
was cut to shit. Yeah, that could have been hard R. Like, that could have been really gruesome.
But it wasn't.
It wasn't. It was not at all.
There was more gruesome stuff in Midnight, I think.
Oh yeah, there was far more gruesome. There was more brutal stuff in Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
That's true, when he has the shield covered in blood.
Yeah, like, that was a striking image, you know?
You don't think he... I think that might have been a good show.
You know what's weird? I forget that show exists.
I don't know if that's weird.
Because, like, if that should be a film, in my opinion.
Oh yeah.
I guess they've learned that mistake. Armor Wars, the movie, coming soon.
We didn't even talk about the post-credits scene in Miss Marvel, or in the Marvels.
We
didn't even talk about it!
Are we done with Loki? We can come back... No, we haven't... So we finished Loki, we'll come back to it.
I mean, I think I've said my piece. I've been humming and hawing about a video, but like if the finale hadn't pulled off, I would have made a video, but the finale pulled off and now that's complicated my thoughts and what I would say in a video, so I'll just leave it here for now.
Listen, Loki is now the god of story. You know what I liked? When he's like holding all the timelines and everything's turning green and he's sitting in that throne, because he never wanted a throne, but now he's got a throne. And then they turn the camera sideways and it's like the trunk of a tree. And then the timeline branch, or literal branches. When I'm sitting watching it, I went, ah!
I was watching with my parents, and I just went, oh, that's kind of clever.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. Oh, I'm overstating it when I went, ah, oh, but you know what I mean? Yeah, I had one of those, like,
it's Yggdrasil, the world tree. I get it. I see what you're doing. I understand.
He's lost his past eyes. He's a little bit forgetful.
I don't know. I mean, like, what do we do with this version of Loki now, though? Like, it seems kind of permanent position he's got there.
It does seem like, well, I mean, maybe, like, he can bleed parts of himself through to any timeline he wants now. He can be omnipotent. He is the Watcher. That's what he is.
I was saying, like, what's the Watcher up to right now? It's just like,
is the Watcher in another dimension outside time and space?
I guess so, yeah. He's in that, like, mirror universe.
But isn't that supposed to be the dimension outside of all dimensions? Isn't that where Loki is also?
You couldn't possibly be pointing out a contradiction in how these things work in the MCU, could you?
No, I would never do that. I would never. I love Marvel.
I would love to see Jeffrey Wright in live action with a big, stupid head. That would be great.
So would I. And I would like to see him with the Watchers that we see in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So let's talk about the post-credit scene of the Marvels. This is the post-credit scene of the podcast.
There's kind of two, although one of them's technically not a post-credit scene, even though it feels like one.
One's just the end of the movie. It's how the movie ends.
Which I enjoyed. I like they're setting up Young Avengers, finally.
Yeah, so I think it should have been a post-credit scene, but I also enjoyed it. I wonder how many people remember the Iron Man 1 post-credit scene now. Like, how many kids are watching this that have never seen Iron Man?
I mean, no one's watching this movie, as we've established. Well, but...
yes, correct.
I don't know. I would imagine, like, if I was a kid starting now, I would want to start at the beginning. But that's me.
So would I, but parents just take their kids to see whatever. And I guess, as we say, no one saw this. But when it hits Disney Plus, you know.
All the movies are on Disney Plus, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And you can on Disney Plus filter it to. There's like a filter for just MCU release order, so.
I mean, it's nice to see Hayley Steinfeld back. I thought she was great in Hawkeye, even if Hawkeye as a show was fairly forgettable.
It's my favourite of all the shows they've done, probably.
Really?
No, She-Hulk is. But Hawkeye would be number two.
I don't remember what happened in Hawkeye. Echo shows up, Kingpin's in it a bit. He's going deaf.
Hawkeye is fun. Hawkeye is just a fun little adventure show.
Yeah, but it's like, I'm not saying it was bad, I just found it forgettable. Like, what happened?
You know, like,
Yelena Belova shows up.
Kate Bishop is investigating some crimes that her mum might be involved in.
And her mum's in the Kingpin. Show, yeah. I remember this now.
And she has a new stepdad, and he has a sword and a mustache.
Yeah, and he's like a red flag, isn't he? Or
yeah, is but he it turns out bad? he's a red herring. Yeah, yes, he's a red herring. It turns out he's just fine.
You remember that show a lot better than I did. I forgot all of that. I just remember them fighting like the gang that were like big babies.
The Red Tracksuit Mafia.
Yeah, the Red Tracksuit Mafia. I was going to call them the big babies. But what is clear is the actual post-credit scene of Miss Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
She wakes up.
We didn't even establish Monica Rambeau. The villain smashes her hands together and opens the multiverse thing, and Monica has to close it from the other side.
Yeah, like completely, like just thrown in at the end of the movie because
it really is.
The jump portals that they've been opening the whole movie are opening like tears in the multiverse, like almost like a window between the jump points.
Yeah,
and. So they need to close it and they come from the other side. And then
the thing that's so out of nowhere about that is that it's like, oh, we're doing a multiverse thing. Is I don't even know what the villain's plan was at that point. What? Why did she do it?
I presume it was like an accident or something.
I guess so. I guess it must have been. It was too much power and she accidentally opened a portal to, spoiler alert, the X-Men universe.
Oh, yeah, or some version of the X-Men universe. Like, is it the version from the Fox comics? Is it another. Is it a continuation of the animated series?
It's confusing because it's Animated Beast, but the architect from the background is clearly like based on the movies.
Yeah, the Fox ones, and as Kelsey Grammer as well. Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's the thing. I think it might just not be one at all. Like, it might just be a new version of it that takes bits and bobs from both. And Maria Rambeau is somehow alive again, but she isn't Monica's mum, and she is the superhero Binary.
Yeah, who's basically Captain Marvel.
Not to be confused with when she actually was Captain Marvel in another timeline from Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
I did totally forget about that until my mum brought it up later and was like, oh yeah, she was in Doctor Strange.
And she was literally Captain Marvel, but she was in the boring Kree version of the suit that they all wore in the first Captain Marvel movie.
Yeah, and she got squished by a statue, so.
I'm not actually convinced that killed her, I just think it knocked her out.
Yeah, I mean, how could it have killed her if she has Captain Marvel powers?
Exactly. Binary, I think, is just basically Captain Marvel. I'm not very sure.
No, I don't know anything about the character. This is
Monica Rambeau never actually got a definitive superhero name at the end of the movie. I thought they were just going to Keeper Queen called Spectrum. I think that is her name in the comics.
I think it's Photon.
Or Photon, yeah, Photon, which is her mother's call sign from the first Captain Marvel movie. Yeah. It's all very confusing. I love the actor who plays Maria Rambeau. I can't remember her name. I really liked her in the first Captain Marvel. I thought she was fantastic in James Bond, No Time to Die. I know everyone was like, oh, female 007, the feminists are taking over. But, that film I thought actually wasn't as bad as I think some people kind of aged it to think that it was. It wasn't great, but I think it's not the worst Bond movie I've ever seen. But I thought she was really good in it. I thought her and Daniel Craig had a lot of chemistry. I think she's very talented. I never saw The Woman King, but people seem to think she was good in that. And again, I think she was terrific in her bits that she's had to do in Marvel. I just wish that she would get more to do in Marvel.
Well, I guess she will, because she's in it again.
I think she's going to be in it the same way Harry Styles is in it, Kyle. based on this film's performance, Kyle, are we ever getting... Are these characters...
They can't resist bringing the X-Men in, though.
Yeah, but they can resist bringing her in. Like, based on the performance of this film, Kyle, do you think we're due at The Marvels 3, right? Or, like, even though the X-Men are definitely going to show up, we might just never have this version resolved. You know, we might have another Kelsey Grammer Beast show up and we'll never address where Monica is, you know?
It's hard to say. We should say
the TVA are due to show up in Deadpool.
Deadpool 3, yeah. I heard about that. Here's the thing. I think there's more. It's more likely than you think, because I think when this movie hits Disney Plus, it'll have a bit of a critical resurgence.
Disney Plus is the only thing that can save this film, though.
Yeah, I think when it comes in Disney Plus, we'll get a lot of people like, actually, this movie is quite good. I think that will be what happens, because it's not a bad movie.
Will the money people care?
No,
Is it too late?
I feel like it's too late either way. Like, they can't just say Captain Marvel doesn't exist anymore. She's too fundamental a part of the stuff they set up.
We get a red film slip that comes in over the screen that's saying Captain Marvel had to go back to her own planet now. Her people needed her. And she left.
I feel like it's worth noting that Miss Marvel, Iman Vellani, has a bit of a cult following at the moment.
Yeah, she's doing
well. Which is certainly something.
Yeah.
And I feel like the Money Men would at least want to capitalise on that.
The thing is, I don't think these characters are done. I think their standalone adventures are done. I mean, I would argue Captain Marvel's standalone adventures done after her first film, even though it made $1 billion, you know? They couldn't even give this Captain Marvel 2. It was like Ant-Man never got an Ant-Man 2, it was Ant-Man and the Wasp, you know? I know Ant-Man and the Wasp did get a sequel. Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. But
except it was just an Ant-Man film and Wasp had nothing to do in the film.
Yeah. But I think that this really might be like a we'll see you in Secret Wars, kiddo. She's supposed to be the first mutant in the MCU officially.
Yes, she has the X gene.
I think it's possible that she will just show up in X-Men, maybe.
Potentially.
She'll be one of the founding members of the MCU X-Men, because I think the Fox X-Men that we're currently getting, Kelsey Grammer's Beast, Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, Patrick Stewart's Professor X, and I think there will be more to come. I think they're here just until Secret Wars, and then Kevin Feige's going to do a proper homegrown here's our Fantastic Four, here's our X-Men, you know?
Well, yeah, X-Men could easily be an entire phase.
Yeah. So I think this is like a goodbye tour for the Fox stuff right now. And I think we're going to do a full reboot with the X-Men.
If they live that long, as in Marvel. especially with that trailer where they showed clips of like Endgame with Tony Stark and Chris Evans.
It was so desperate.
And now there's like some talks about how they might be trying to bring Tony Stark back for Secret Wars, and it's like, if they go that direction, they might just kill it.
I should note, I've always believed since Endgame that for the next big Infinity War Endgame level movies that they do, both Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. will return for it. I've never thought of it on a creative level, but on a business level, I was like, they will return. Because I think there was always kind of murmurs about this will lead into multiversal stuff. And I just, why not? I would love to see Iron Man and Hugh Jackman's The Wolverine.
I don't like this attitude that I don't like Twitter. I don't like anyone on Twitter. Twitter sucks, but I'm there anyway because I have an addiction and it's a problem. But you know, that's a story for another day.
Yeah.
But I do also feel that sometimes where it's like I need more there than just seeing Hugh Jackman interact with Iron Man. There needs to be an actual story there. That's something I actually appreciated about this post-credit scene, getting back to that, is it wasn't about Beast being there. It was about her mum being there, and Beast being there was incidental.
It was about her not being her mum, as a matter of fact.
Well, sure, yeah. But yeah. That's where the actual point of the scene was.
Yeah. The point of the scene was between these two original characters for the MCU, and it wasn't a hey look at the X-Men.
Yeah, because that's what some of these other post-credit scenes have been like.
Yeah,
like, do you remember we were talking about this the other day of like all the unresolved post-credit scenes that are up in the air now?
Yeah,
like, well, you mentioned Harry Styles and remember when Charlize Theron showed up?
Yes, I do. I feel like she was a bigger part of that movie, but she was literally just in the post-credit scene.
No, I mean, she got on the costume for it, or they put a CGI costume on it. We don't know, I guess.
What was the other ones?
Hercules? Remember Hercules?
Yeah, but Thor 5 is going to actually be happening, Taika Waititi not returning.
I mean, we'll see if Hercules is in it, though.
I actually think they will. For some reason, I kind of think Thor might be okay. I know Love and Thunder wasn't well received, but like, I think it is, like, I don't know. There's something in my head that says Thor seems to be separate from all of this. Blade in the Eternals.
Oh, that one's even better. Blade off screen with Black Knight. So didn't someone funny. Ask him recently if he's going to be in Blade? And he's like, I don't know, maybe.
I could be, I guess. Who knows? Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. You see, someone asked Chris Evans recently if he wanted to be in another DC property or join Marvel, and he says, no, I don't want anything to do with superheroes.
I'm not surprised. He did it for a decade.
Sorry, Chris Pine, I meant. I meant Chris Pine.
Oh, Chris Pine, right.
After the Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that either.
Like, the DC chaos might have been too much for him. And then,
it's
like,
very possible.
Now he's seeing Marvel on fire, and he's like, maybe I'll show up for The Boys.
Maybe you'll be in Star Trek, Nathan.
Never. Listen, it's so weird that eventually the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies are like maybe 5 years away from starting to be in the nostalgia cycle.
It's true.
Like, Chris Hemsworth is gonna... Not Chris Hemsworth. Well, yeah, Chris Hemsworth. He was in those movies. But Chris Pine is going to, like, show up in some unrelated Star Trek TV show post-credit scene in, like, the Kelvin Timeline uniform and be like, hello, I'm Captain. And everyone's going to go, Admiral. He'll be Admiral, of course, now because he's that old.
Yeah.
You know?
He'll be in, like, a recreation of the old movie uniforms, but, like, in the J.J. Abrams style.
Yeah, he'll show up in the Star Trek The Motion Picture Admiral uniform, but J.J. Abrams-ified, and he'll be in the Section 31 movie. Right. Is it in a post-credit scene? But hello, course, I'm Admiral Kirk, and I'm here to woo you or something because he's a sex pest in the JJ films.
I've a mission for you, Empress Georgia, and Empress, it's in my bedroom.
Yes, oh yeah, warp speed, Simon Pegg.